3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eighth strikeout for the King tonight, and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back once again. Gary Hill back with you. Thanks for being here again. A lot to get to in this one, as we always do. Every podcast so full of Mariners goodness. We're going to break down the ball game last night. That was a tough one for the Mariners. Some nights, things just don't go your way. That happened on really both sides. You're talking offensively. You're talking pitching-wise, too. I'll break that down as the Mariners drop game one to the Phillies. Also get you ready for game two today. Very interesting pitching matchup and a good one, so we'll talk about that coming up. Aaron Goldsmith had a conversation with Dave Valle, which is fantastic. Of course, he's managing in Everett this year, and it's pretty interesting getting the inside look, especially talking about players at that age and at that level and how much is teaching, how much is coaching the game, how much is coaching life at the same time when you're talking about, you know, some kids that are out of high school, some out of college. I mean, it's quite a mix. So very good conversation coming up with Aaron Goldsmith and Dave Valle. Also, one of my favorites, Chris Woodward. Shannon Dreher, a chance to have an extensive conversation with Chris Woodward. We've talked a lot about defense, especially as of late, because the Mariners' defense has been sensational. They've been improved in so many different areas. I've been meaning to go through some interesting Sabre notes about where the Mariners rank, where individual players rank in terms of their numbers, and it's pretty impressive. Kyle Seager is up there among third baseman. Dustin Ackley up there in terms of left field. But with infield in particular, I don't think we can give enough credit to Andy Van Slyke with the outfield and then Chris Woodward with the infield. Works so much with those infielders to work with them to improve defensively. And you know, we had Mark Simon on the podcast a couple of days ago talking about Kyle Seager being the most improved player in baseball defensively. So Chris Woodward's going to be here to talk about Kyle Seager and how he's done that, and also Chris Taylor, the young shortstop, and just defense in general. He's also going to talk a little bit about knuckleballs as well, which is pretty great. But it's always a great conversation when Chris Woodward is here. So that's coming up as well. Also, a reminder, you can find this podcast now on Mariners.com. It's has its new home. We're still ironing out some of the issues. So if you've already subscribed there, we've had some hiccups along the way, but I think we've got them pretty much ironed out now. So not going to make the switch yet. It's still going to be, I think, a couple of weeks, but I'll definitely keep you updated and let you know when we make that the permanent home, and that's where to subscribe to the podcast on a permanent basis. So again, sorry that we got to make the switch from one to the other, but there's not much we can do about it. And I think in the long term, it's definitely worth it. I'm pretty excited about it. So Mariners.com is where you can find it. Go to fans and then podcast at the top, and it's got its own little page right there. You can subscribe to it from there on iTunes. You can find it on iTunes as well. You can actually find both of them right now. Same podcast, just right now I post it to both spots. So just a quick reminder that that is coming up. I still have a lot of requests to get to. I'm working on a few things that I'm pretty excited about, and you've continued to send in requests, which is fantastic. So I'm looking to bang a few out here. Really great questions and great topics that you've sent my way. So I know some of them I take a long time with, but I mean, I think they deserve time because, I mean, they are great questions, and I try and give my best and, you know, try and get the best perspective on those. So continue to send them my way on Twitter. At Gary Hill Jr. And of course, you can email me as well, GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. And it's been great stuff. I really appreciate your interaction the past few weeks. It's been a lot of fun, especially as things are heating up in terms of the standings. And boy, the standings are about as close as can be when you look at everything going on right now. So after the Mariners fall game one to Philadelphia, I mean, it's tight. Mariners now tied with the wild card once again. The Angels, they won. So right now the AL West looks like this. The Angels on top, Oakland half game back.
Mariners 6.5 back of the Angels, 6 back of the A's. Kansas City 2 ahead of Detroit. And the Mariners and Tigers tied for the second wild card. So that's where we sit coming into the ball game tonight. Last night, Rennis Elias on the hill for the M's.
Rennis Elias on the hill. He hadn't been on the mound, at least in the big leagues, in a while, but he'd been on a nice roll. His ERA just a touch above 2 in his last 4 starts. His last time out in Tacoma, he was unbelievable. 5 innings of no-hit ball and extremely sharp. And got himself into a little bit of a jam early on, but then pitched out of it.
The 0-2 to Utley, and it's strike 3 called. He gets him with that slow curveball, and Utley can't believe it. Strike 3, strikeout number 1 for Rennis Elias, that slow curveball.
Yeah, the curve was the weapon early on. Walked 2 in the first inning, but danced out of trouble. They got some help from his D later on in the second inning.
The pitch to Blanco, swing and a fly ball, well hit left center field, going back Ackley and Jackson. Jackson on the run, reaches out, and he makes the catch. Way out there on the warning track, hustling back to first is Ruff. The throw in is cut off by the shortstop, Taylor. No throw to first. Blanco gave it a great ride, but Austin Jackson outruns the baseball.
Meanwhile, the Mariners trying to get something mounted offensively. Seager, a leadoff walk in the second. That was wasted. Then Dustin Ackley, he had a nice night. He came through with a double in the third.
The pitch. Swinging, it's lifted to left field. Ruff has to come race it in. Out goes Ashy, the third baseman. It plops in between the two of them. Ackley going for second, getting greedy. Spikes for a slide, and he's safe. A bloop double to shadow left field right near the line, and Ackley is in at second base with 2 outs.
Their offense in this game looked like a camper in the forest. It's kind of raining. He's kind of huddled down. He's rubbing the sticks together to try and get that fire going. Just rubbing away, and it won't get started no matter what happens. And that's what this offense looked like early on against Jerome Williams. Meanwhile, Rennis Elias, he didn't have his command, didn't have his control. We'll talk about that more as we move through this show, but the third inning, Phillies finally get to him after a couple of walks. It was Bird with a big knock.
Elias deals, swinging his clock down the left field line. This is a fair ball into the corner, right by the pole. Ruiz to third. He rounds and scores easily up on his feet. Howard goes first to third after his two-out walk. Marlon Bird gives the Phillies a 1-0 lead on a 2-out RBI double all the way into the left field corner.
Then after another walk, the bases were loaded. The Phillies were looking to pile on early in this ball game, but credit Elias with this. He did get out of the bases loaded jam.
It's a 2-2 swing and a miss, and he gets him with the hook. A devastating curveball from Rennis Elias, and he somehow gets out of this third. He has walked 5, including 3 this inning, but he gets Ashy swinging wildly away for a curveball, and he leaves him loaded.
It's kind of funny. I was watching that situation with the bases loaded, and it looks so unfamiliar with the Mariners facing a bases loaded situation. So I looked it up, and you know, that's only the 56th time this season that Mariners pitchers have faced a bases loaded situation and at bat with the bases loaded. The 56th time, that's the least in baseball. An opponent's just batting .214 against the M's with the sacks juiced. And again, it happened in the fourth inning. Bases loaded again. It looked like Elias was going to get pulled. Leon warming in the bullpen, loaded again. This time it was Howard, and Elias gets out of it again.
The 1-0, swinging a ground ball to first. Up with the ball, Morales, he's got it, and takes it to the bag, steps on the pillow for the out on Howard, and that will retire the side. Lloyd McLendon having faith in Elias, and Elias gets out of a bases loaded jam here in the bottom of the fourth inning, getting Ryan Howard.
So that was the 57th at-bat of the year with the bases loaded against the Mariners, and Elias got out of them both. Boy, it's pretty amazing when you look back at this start for Elias. He really struggled with his command, a whole lot of walks, and he only gave up 1 run, which is pretty amazing through 4 innings. Then Leon comes on, strikes out the first batter he faces, then gives up a double and a walk, and this was a stunner.
Here's the pitch, swung on, well hit ball, deep to right field. Morrison going back down the line, goodbye baseball. Andres Blanco with his first home run of the season. A 3-run drive here in the bottom of the fifth, and the Phillies now lead 4-0.
Liberty Bell going off in the background as he hits his first home run since 2011. It had been a while.
That's not the most striking number out of this, though. With that one swing of the bat, that one swing to drive in three runs, that accounts for 9% of the runs the Mariners as a pitching staff have given up this month. That's how good and dominant this staff has been. That one swing of the bat, 9% of the runs. Unfortunately, it was huge in this ballgame. Staked the Phillies to a 4-0 lead. Mariners would finally break through in the eighth inning. Ironically, after Williams leaves, they're going against Giles, the flamethrower. It's been outstanding this year, but they break through.
The stretch and the 0-2 swinging a line drive down the left field line. And this one is going to be in there for a fair ball, giving chase to Sizemore. Running third, it's Taylor. He will score. Round to third goes Chavez. The throw in by Sizemore is cut off by the shortstop Blanco. Dustin Ackley with another hit, an RBI double. Yes, indeed, the Mariners get on the board.
But not enough. Strikeouts by Cano, Morales. They end the eighth inning. That's not a position you want to be in. The Philadelphia Phillies as a staff has struggled, but their strength is the back end. Giles can really pitch. He has had a monster year. A 1.27 ERA just throws flames, strikes out three in this game, does give up two hits, which is a lot more than many teams can say. Of course, Papelbon doesn't have the same electric stuff as he used to, but still plenty effective. He's got a 1.58 ERA. So Phillies, not a team when you get to the eighth, ninth inning you want to be behind. You got to do your work early on in the ballgame, and the Mariners just couldn't.
So the Mariners fall in game one of the series, and they turn their attention to game two. Still a chance to get the series, but it's not going to be easy because you have Cole Hamels, one of the best in the National League, lurking in game three of the series, and he is really pitching well. It's not going to be easy. One of the best pitchers in the NL. But first things first, you got to get game two if you're going to get the series. So Hisashi Iwakuma will go for the M's. He has been sensational, 11-6, a 2.72 ERA, and he's really just been lights out. I mean, and he is so consistent. He is pitching so well right now. Two earned runs in his last three starts. One at Baltimore, 7 2/3. One against the White Sox, 7 innings. Zero against Toronto. He goes 6 2/3 in that one. He has been on a big-time roll. He has been lights out. He has been dominant. His ERA continues to just go down and down and down. 2.72 now on the season. And he'll try and give the Mariners the win in the second game of the series. And they're going against a wily veteran on the other side of things, a name that's pretty familiar, a guy that's been around for a long, long time now. A.J. Burnett is going to get the call for the Phillies. 6-13, a 4.35 ERA on the campaign. It's been kind of an up-and-down season at times, and especially his last couple of starts, 4 earned against the Angels his last time out, 5 against the Mets, where he gave up 11 hits. Both those starts were 6 innings. And then against Washington, he got chased early after an inning and 2/3. Start before that against the Mets, gave up 7 earned in 5 innings. You know, before the stretch, he had a 3.86 ERA, but he's just really been struggling the last handful of starts, and he'll try and get things turned around against the Mariners. M's looking to get this win, though. We'll take the air at 3 o'clock for the pregame show. 4 o'clock for first pitch from Philadelphia as the Mariners try and even up this series. Going to be another wild day, no doubt about that, with the way things are shaking out. So, Mariners, of course, in the thick of things, and a big reason why is their defense. It has been awesome this year, and a big part of the reason why it's been awesome is Chris Woodward. And here is Shannon Dreher and Chris Woodward talking about the defense, and starting with one of the most improved defenders in Major League Baseball, Kyle Seager.
He's improved in pretty much every aspect of playing the position. And he's open to, you know, not only criticism from myself, you know, early in spring training and before the season started, but he's taken on things and become so good at things so quickly that it even boggles my mind, because I had high expectations for him, because like we talked about earlier, he was a good third baseman to start with. Mm-hmm. He had every play that you can think of, but now it was just kind of taking it to the next level. There was a few things, you know, maybe coming in on balls that we discussed that he's, I think, drastically improved on, but everything else he's just improved on overall. He always had a really accurate arm, probably the most accurate arm I've ever seen.
Wow.
he's got, I would say, above average arm strength, especially when he needs it. When he needs it, he's able to throw it harder. He doesn't always have to use that, which is great because he's got that perfect tempo, you know, very catchable ball, very consistent movement. But his fielding ability has improved, you know, side to side, coming in, going back. Everything has improved, and he's so quick getting rid of it with accuracy, especially on double plays, is where I feel like he's helped us the most, because Robbie's, you know, one of the best at turning double plays from the second base position, but Kyle gets it to him almost in the same spot every time with, you know, with quickness. So he gets it to him quick, because as a third baseman from coming to a second baseman, the quicker you get it to him, the better off he is, because usually that's the play where the second baseman gets in trouble because that runner's on him. And if you give it to him on the back of the bag, it makes it even better because he can use the base to protect himself. Mm-hmm. And Robbie's the best at just using the back of the bag as protection with a strong arm. So those two combos, I mean, they've turned double plays from third to second, first, like that I would say maybe a handful of guys can maybe do, but they do it consistently. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like every ground ball over there, we have a chance. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's amazing how many times he's coming in on a ball, throwing back, you know, to the back side of the bag, and he's just it boggles my mind sometimes to think about how good he's gotten so quickly.
He's worked a lot on the physical side of the game. Well, you see him out running quite a bit. Has that helped his mobility a little bit over there?
I think so, and I think it's that coupled with the fact that he trusts his movements out there. You know, like I said, coming through a ball, he's got no inhibitions at all. He just comes right through it, and he trusts it. He plays the position with a lot more conviction, I think, which is one thing I talked to him about in spring training. When you do it, you know, if you do it with conviction, you're going to be successful a lot. And, you know, side to side, he gets great jumps. I mean, I see him every day, and I'm saying he gets a lot better jumps than some shortstops do, which is insane because you don't have as much information at the third base, you know, as you do at the middle. You don't have the luxury of knowing exactly what pitch is coming, where the pitch is actually going. You just have to stare at the hitter, basically.
Right.
You know, the shortstop helps him out, giving him off-speed pitches. But it still is not the same amount of information because you can't watch the pitch go into the hitter.
Right.
So his, you know, judgment on swings, you know, he reads, you know, bats pretty well coming through the zone. And I see him breaking one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of the season, he wasn't as good as he is right now. Right now, he's moving sometimes couple feet before the ball's even hit, which is amazing because I know how hard it is to play that position. And, you know, I was a shortstop my whole career, but knowing at third base that I didn't have as much information kind of made me panic because you don't really know. You know, sometimes it's hard to know which side it's going to actually go to because the guy can pull it to both sides.
Right.
So it's but he's been tremendous.
It's funny because we saw Brendan Ryan here for a few years, and his ability to read what the pitcher was doing with the swing and everything, that he used his eyesight as much as anything else in his positioning. How do you think Kyle does that?
He's dedicated. You know, I've stressed it to him to be great, to play the position and be great at it, not just be good, because he was already good. Mm-hmm. And I think he's taken that on, and he's taken, you know, the next step to where – and he plays the position with such a calmness that's – it's so hard to – you can't teach that. Mm-hmm. You can't teach a guy to have a 50 heart rate when he's playing third base, because it is a tough position when you got Miguel Cabrera hitting, and you know that he's every pitch has got a chance to hit a rocket down your throat.
Right.
You know, and he just plays it like it's – you know, and he just never seems to get too high out there. You know, his heart rate's just kind of low, and he's calm, and that allows him to just, you know, trust his eyes.
I would say that's Kyle, because that's kind of his personality too, but it also might be the guy over at second base, because that's how he does it.
I would think that's it's pretty much the same. I always say, I wonder whose heart rate's higher right now. they're like neck and neck at like 55. So it's fun to watch both those guys, obviously, because, you know, Robbie plays the position the same way.
Right.
You know, he just plays no panic, and that allows his body to work. And it's hard. I think it's easier to do that at second base.
Yeah.
Because you don't have as much demand as, you know, you have a lot more information. I know playing the corners for myself personally, it was a lot more stressful because you don't get as many balls, but when you do, they're not easy ones. Mm-hmm. You know, second base, you get a lot of just routine throw at 20 feet. Third base, you don't get those. You either get the rockets, you get topspin balls, you get hooking balls, you get all kinds of different plays, and he just handles it. He's still got the second base mentality playing third base, mm-hmm. where he's just kind of relaxed. But yet he's thinking.
Rookie shortstop Chris Taylor. He's made a lot of brilliant plays, but he's had the occasional misfire to first base. Woodward tells us what he's seen.
I think he just needs to get some more experience. I think he uses his brain more than anybody I've ever seen at such a young age. He's prepared. He does everything that we ask. It's a tough spot to be in when you're a young shortstop and you're playing in a contending team. Mm-hmm. I can't understate the importance of that. And, mm-hmm. and as much as, you know, I talked to both him and Brad, they both care a lot, mm-hmm. About the success of this team. And there's when there's no experience or there's no past, success to build off of, as a big league player, you're still trying to prove yourself on a contending team. That's difficult. It's a difficult thing to ask. And, I just ask them to play fearless every day, regardless of the results. He made an error in the first inning, but yet made five or six other plays, right. Made a dive and play in the hole. So just keeping that confidence, that drive out there to not kind of sit back and go, okay, I got to be careful, because mm-hmm. that's the last thing I want him to think out there, because that's when, mistakes can snowball. Mm-hmm. But I think I thought Brad played pretty well, and Chris, I just keep telling him to push forward, because he's got that special ability where he can process a lot of information, mm-hmm. and you watch him get jumps out there. He gets probably the best jumps from anybody I've seen. And we watched Hardy, we watched a couple other pretty good shortstops, and he was better in my eyes at mm-hmm. just getting reads and understanding the situation, moving himself. He moves with counts, so that's all I can ask. Honestly, and then it's just the next step is just the experience, building on hopefully success, and we get rolling here. Obviously we're playing some important games, so yeah. it's really good for him. I'm actually glad in some ways that he was able to fail and get over it early, mm-hmm. and still play eight innings of good defense, yeah. After that, yeah. which says a lot about a guy, because that was the biggest game thus far in our season.
Did you teach him that glove flip?
No, I didn't. I'm just glad he threw it right there.
That was, I think, if you had any question if everything was okay after the play before, that kind of answered it right there. That's got to put a smile on your face.
It did. It kind of, surprised me a bit, right. But I was like, that's good. That shows that he's, obviously he was pretty upset that he made the error, and he's happy right. that it didn't cost us. Talking to him afterwards, that's all he cared about. He was, as long as it didn't cost us a run. Obviously, he knew it cost us some pitches or whatever by our pitcher, but at the end of it, they didn't score. So that was what he was most concerned about.
Lastly, a little bit about you. I heard that you were throwing in the cages before the R.A. Dickey game. You throw a knuckleball, and you learned it from one of the best.
Yeah, Wakefield.
All right, then.
I think it's a little different than Dickey's, but I don't know. I mean, I just figured I'd offer it to some of the guys. It's a pitch you don't see very often, and if we face him one more time this year, that would only be twice all year. So it's just one of those things where some guys maybe would want to see one. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to take any credit, but Austin Jackson and DeNorfia got a hit in their first at bat, so I'll take credit for those two guys. But some guys, they don't. I don't blame them if they don't want to see it. They're just it's kind of a gimmick thing, and they just want to roll with it and mm-hmm. see how they handle it. Mm-hmm. I've heard 100 different ways to attack a knuckleballer, and who knows if they're right.
I like Lloyd's way. Just take batting practice off that day.
That's perfect. Yeah, you just take the thought process out of it and just score two in the first, and that's all we need.
And that was Shannon Dreyer and Chris Woodward, one of the best guys to talk to about baseball and about defense in particular. Fun conversation as always. And now we're going to hand things over to Aaron Goldsmith. This is a really good conversation too, as he gets a chance to talk with our friend of the broadcast, Everett Aqua Sox manager Dave Valley.
How are things in the second half for you guys these days?
They've gone really well. The first half was difficult. A lot of young players, a lot of guys, young players learning how to adjust to professional baseball. But the second half, things are starting to turn around. We were in first place up until a couple of days ago. Right now, I believe we're just about one game back. So we're playing better. I'm seeing these young men get better. Their thinking processes are starting to be smarter. I think from day to day, as these young players they enter into the world of professional baseball, coming from both high school and college where they're only playing, you know, three or four times a week. And now all of a sudden we're calling them out there to play every single night to compete against better levels of talent. It's not an easy transition, but it's one that they're starting to turn around.
Val, break it down for us. What's the ratio of you teaching baseball skills and you teaching life skills to these young men? Because these young men are in a point of their life where they're learning a lot about the world, both on the diamond and away from the ballpark, too.
Ratio is probably 2-to-1 as far as life skills to professional skills. You know, they are
really?
All obviously very talented young men. They all have the ability to play the game of baseball. Whether or not they're able to apply some of the things that we're teaching them is gonna really make the difference between them going to A ball next year and Double A and Triple A and start to climb the ladder like we've seen some guys in the recent past like James Jones. But I'll give you an example. 3 days ago, we were in Vancouver, and we lost a really, really tough 14-inning game. And, you know, at the end of the game, we ended up losing on a wild pitch. And I came in after the game, and I just gathered everybody up, and I said, listen, gentlemen, I said, if you guys think we lost that game because of a wild pitch, I said, you're sorely mistaken. And I just recounted some of the issues that we had in the first 5 innings of the game. We left 5 guys on third base with more or less outs. We made 2 errors. We made 2 mental errors that cost us 4 runs, one in the 8th and 3 in the bottom of the 9th. So the next day, I wanted to make sure that I drove the point home about being responsible and being accountable to each other as teammates. So, you know, I got into a little session where I was just trying to explain to them how their actions, whether good or bad, error or good play, impacts the guy to their left and to their right. And, you know, I just used some of the mental errors that ended up costing, you know, my pitcher probably another 15 to 20 pitches in that one particular inning. And then he had to go back out there in the bottom of the 9th with those extra pitches on his back and still go out there and try to perform. And then bottom of the 9th was led off by a pop-up that was dropped. They allowed it to fall. So all of these things that occur out there impacts the guy in front of you, behind you, to your left and to your right. And, you know, and I told him, I said, this is not just about baseball. I said, no matter what you end up doing in life, and I have one kid who's going to be a surgeon. And I asked him, I said, Mr. Lindquist, I said, someday you're going to be in a surgical room. I said, can you do your surgery by yourself? He said, no, sir. I said, can you do the job of the nurses? He said, no, I wouldn't be able to do that. I said, how about, can you do the job of the anesthesiologist? He said, no, I wouldn't be able to do that. So I said, you can't do that by yourself, can you? You can't perform that surgery. And I said, gentlemen, you can't play baseball by yourself. You know, we all get so wrapped up in what's important to me, and it's all about me and my numbers and my batting average and my runs driven in, but we can't do it. We can't play the game of baseball by ourselves. And I said, Ken Griffey Jr. was one of the greatest players to ever wear a uniform. And I said, and I had the privilege of playing with him, but I said, Jr. couldn't play center field unless I was catching. Somebody had to catch. And I said, Jr. didn't want to catch. And nor could I play center field. So we all have this role to play, but we all impact each other. Yes, I'm standing at the plate all by myself, and I'm hitting by myself, but how I perform is going to impact the guy that's hitting behind me. So, you know, in answer to your question, that was a long answer to your question, but it just happened a few days ago. I just wanted to make these guys understand that all of the things that they do on a baseball field has an impact on the team and the guys in front of them and behind them.
No, that's great. That is a really good answer. That's good stuff. We're talking with Dave Valley, manager of the short season Everett Aqua Sox. And Val, this is your rookie campaign. You're a first-time skipper. What have you enjoyed the most about the job so far?
You know, I've really enjoyed being around the young men. Who have a passion to play, who have a passion to learn. You know, some of it's been frustrating. I think that is probably evident with any manager or coach that's in the area of development, especially at this level, you know, where guys are really starting to learn. But I've enjoyed the teaching part. I've enjoyed the encouraging part of it. And I tell you what, when you do win, it makes it that much sweeter. You know, being in the broadcast booth, being behind the desk at MLB Network, you don't have skin in the game. You know, when the game's over, you know, you can kind of go, okay, we're all good. Let's, you know, where are we going to go eat? But when you have a uniform on, it makes the losses that much more painful, and it makes the wins that much better.
Final thought here with Val. And Val, what have you learned the most so far in your first year?
How much I love the game of baseball, fortunate I am to be a part of it in so many different capacities. You know, I was telling Kevin Krimen just yesterday when he asked me to come on, you know, just how blessed I feel to be able to manage this season, and also how fortunate I am to be able to still be a broadcaster, that I've had this opportunity to experience both sides of it. And I think it's better than I even anticipated, you know, being back in uniform. It's kind of revitalized me, you know. I'm in better shape. I'm throwing BP every day. I just feel really good about everything.
Hey, Val. That was a great interview. Thank you.
Oh.
It's Kev.
All right, my man.
That was really, really good.
Kevin Krimen. Producer engineer.
Good morning, Kev. Good morning, Val. Lovely day in Detroit.
Yeah.
You'll be very you're pleased.
It was a great day back here. We got a day game at 4:00 for all the folks who can't go to Safeco Field. Come on up to Everett and watch us win today. We're playing the Vancouver Canadiens.
Perfect day for it.
You know, Val, when Kevin Krimen puts down his morning ribeye to pick up a microphone, I mean,
that's what shocked me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're doing something right.
It's just it's a blueberry muffin.
Well, for him to come on and not talk about food, you know, I mean, that's the big thing. He actually came on to talk to me. I feel really honored this morning.
You should be. Val, it's always a treat. We really appreciate you carving out a few moments of your busy morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I tell you what, guys, it's so exciting to see the Mariners where they're at in contention for that wild card spot right now. And I'm really looking forward to getting back and watching them run down the stretch there in the month of September. It's been a while, and I hope the entire Northwest is excited about what's happening.
There it was, Dave Valle. And to celebrate Dave Valle, we're going to play the – I don't know if I played this on the podcast yet. I'm not sure I did a few weeks ago. But here's Dave Valle getting tossed for the very first time. He got thrown out. I love it, too, because he's defending a wrong call on a kid who hit his very first home run. Should have been his first home run. Instead, it was called a foul ball. And Dave Valle out there defending it and gets tossed from the ball game. This is a call from Everett Aqua Sox longtime play-by-play announcer Pat Dillon. And we're trying to work out getting Pat Dillon on the podcast. He's fantastic, really good up there in Everett. And we hope to have him on. It's kind of tough with, you know, Everett's schedule and the Mariners' schedule and everything else. But hopefully we'll get a chance to sit down and talk to Pat Dillon here in the near future. But he was kind enough to send this call, which is fantastic. We loved it. Dave Valle getting tossed from the ball game.
It appeared that ball hit off the Speedway sign. That is technically out of the ballpark. And by the ground rule, that should have been a home run. And now the umpires are going to talk about it, and I think they're going to decide that Taylor Smart has his first professional home run. And this is about as cut and dried as you can get. And the home plate umpire, Ben Bayer, signaled palms down as soon as it came off the Speedway sign. What are they going to do here? And now they're going to talk to the base umpire, Kale Rodriguez, is going to talk to Valle about it. The Speedway sign is out of the ballpark. That should be a home run. And that's what Valley's talking about. And now, after the home plate umpire Bayer came out and joined the discussion, he went back behind home plate. This is what they discuss at home plate prior to the beginning of a series. All of the ground rules, and that's one of them. Remember one time, now Val's just been thrown out. And Dave Valle has heard his first ejection as an Chippewa Sox manager. Val is absolutely red hot. They called him the Volcano. That was one of his nicknames during his playing days. And that volcano has just erupted here in the fifth inning.
See you later!